Tom, we're back. It's
we're in
the sun
studio
is shining.
Again. The sun is
spring
out.
Is here.
It is.
We're in studio, and we're talking about culture.
And we are talking about culture. And go ahead.
And I just heard that your daughter got a pet. Didn't she? She got a cat.
Wow,
recently?
That it really gets around, you know. I didn't.
It's in the New York Times, I believe.
Yes, she did. She
a new member of the family.
It's a new member of the family. They have two children: a young lady who's about to turn 10, and a young man who is going to turn 5 this summer. And now they have a 1-year-old kitten or a cat, I guess, at 1. And just joined the family. Yeah.
Terrific.
And they're very happy, and the cat can go anywhere it wants pretty much and do anything it wants, as cats will.
That's not going
to
change.
No, whether you want them to or not. Actually, the cat has gone many areas they do not want it to go. Did that almost like day one.
Because that's what immediately, yeah.
That's how they know they have a cat and not a
absolutely.
Dog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It actually figured out how to climb into the bottom of the oven and up behind it.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's no advantage to doing that, but it's a cat, and it just went, because I can, and then got stuck.
It got stuck, yeah. It's like a paw flailing.
And what's the name of the cat?
The name, well, it's called Gigi, but the name is actually G. Gordon Kitty.
Yeah.
which, for those of you who are not familiar with the history of the Watergate era in the United States around Richard Nixon's presidency, one of the infamous contributors to that all of that, that ended up with the president having to resign for the only time in the history of the United States. Was a gentleman by the name of G. Gordon Liddy. And as we do this podcast, Mr. Liddy has just passed away within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, just in this last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they got a cat.
And then they got a cat, but they had already gotten the cat.
Before that, yeah.
The cat was named prior to Mr. Liddy actually shedding the human coil.
But there are reasons for these things.
Well, yes, because now he no longer was needed. So they had another thing that was a pain in the neck.
So now he's taken over the body of this incarnate.
Well, let's
creature.
Hope not, but it's possible. Yeah, it's possible.
And they
especially
have,
with cats, it's possible.
It's possible, of course. Yes. Right.
Now and the interesting thing with Mr. Liddy also is that he not the cat, but Liddy, not Kitty.
The human Liddy, not the kitty Liddy.
Sure. Right. Yes. I don't know what he said.
No one does.
No, okay. he ended up having like multiple careers and doing quite well for himself, which is really kind of amazing since and never spoke a word of regret of the things he did during the time of the Watergate
era.
He didn't have any. Nope. And which makes him a very dangerous human being.
Yeah.
Because you just don't care, then what do you do?
But
you
know? Tom, don't speak ill of the dead.
No, I will. I certainly will. And he deserves it. And he probably would agree if he was sitting here right now. He had his own podcast.
Exactly. But the whole idea that your daughter has now a new member of the family.
That's right.
A feline.
So it brought an animal into the house.
Made me think of a wonderful conversation I think we might have.
Uh-huh.
What's the cultural piece to this?
Well, because, you know, we've spoken just a little bit about certain animals around the world, but I don't think we've really discussed pets around the world.
Pets around the world. Is there a cultural issue to that?
Around the world. Is there ever not a cultural aspect?
Because I am Dean Foster.
And I'm Tom Peterson.
And this is
Oops
Your culture's showing. And we also have Torin with us.
Oh
today.
Yeah, he's our pet.
What?
What?
Sorry, Torin. He's with us in studio again. This is crazy stuff.
And Torin, yeah. you grew up with pets, didn't you?
I did.
You had
yes.
numerous.
Yeah, we had a few, or a couple when I was, well, that's not true. I think Bananas and Tuesday, which are cats,
yes.
were still around when I was very,
when you
very
were
young,
very,
right?
very young.
Okay, so
yes.
I don't remember them.
No.
But I remember our cat Chicken.
Yeah.
Or your chicken named Cat.
Or, and the chicken named Cat.
Yeah,
came
yeah,
later.
As you do.
Uh-huh. And our dog named Bailey.
Yeah.
Who was very cute.
Well, there was also the cat named Lester.
Right, that's right, Lester. Yep. Yep.
And there was Fox as well, although Fox was an outdoor cat.
Okay, again, when I was young. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was also the fox named Cat.
There was. We had chicken
Why
and the fox. They were from
Lester
the same litter.
This is an interesting pattern. You constantly named an animal after another animal.
Yes, well, that's right.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Because they resembled?
Well, there's actually a reason for that, but it would just bore you to tears. So,
well, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
And I'm thinking, okay, it's always cats or dogs. Cats or dogs. Cats or dogs here
pretty much
in the U.S.
Right.
These seem to be the predominant, you know.
Yeah.
And there are certain cultural patterns to this. Because I remember reading that as the country became more and more urbanized, cats become the preferred animal because they don't take as much attention. Mm. You can leave them in the apartment.
I think there may have been another reason, too.
Because
you're talking the Industrial Revolution.
No, I'm talking about much more recently than that.
Ah, okay. Yes, well, absolutely.
Recent urbanization.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But
okay.
The cat was always in the house because they kept the rats away.
That's
throughout
the other,
history.
And I think in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when the urban areas really started to grow, that became a huge factor. But it also had been a huge factor on the farms.
Yes, the barn cat was in the barn.
The mousers.
The mousers, yeah. And you didn't feed these animals because you wanted them to live off the mice.
That's right. But also, that's a working animal. It's almost like the cats on the farms, for the most part, were like the horses. You know, they were to do work of some kind, whether it was carrying humans around or it was pulling a plow. Or it was something like that.
Turning a wheel.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
Or
and
inventing the computer. There was this horse that
horse.
Once.
Yeah.
Love that horse.
In the stable. It was sitting, burning the midnight oil, just working on those.
He was amazing.
Working on those.
Who's his name? Ed?
Zeros and ones.
Something like that.
Something.
Yeah.
Anyway, you couldn't shut him up. That's all I know. But there was a lot of
horse feathers.
moving quickly.
But to your point, Tom,
can
a working animal...
a point? Hold on.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
Well,
yes.
I'm taking a point from what you're saying. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can a working animal be defined as a pet?
Yeah. See, I don't think so.
So, no.
Is your cow your pet? Probably not. Could it be? I guess it could be, but then you have to treat it significantly different than most cows get treated.
Right. I think the definition of a pet is where you simply have an animal for... affection.
Yep.
To take this place of an object of affection. Basically.
Yes, I think a company especially people who might live alone might need it to just give them something else around.
And then you have that strange category of animals that provide emotional support, where one could make the case that they are working animals. Not necessarily pets.
You could.
But they're somewhere in between, right?
Yeah, because that's almost like getting a...
You still love them like a pet.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk now, people growing older and living longer, and in some cases they can't really live by themselves. So there's a whole industry that is built around that where people come in and spend a lot of time or, in fact, live with older people in order to give them support and help take care of them, but also emotional support. And in doing so, I'm sure there's an attachment there, at least from the person who is being taken care of. And I'm thinking that those animals offer that as well. Now, is there going to be a give and take on that? I think so. I think those emotional support animals are going to both, I mean, aren't they going to get some sort of whatever animals get out of that? They're still going to get out of it.
But they get food and care and...
And attention.
Attention, yeah.
And they give back attention.
Right,
and what we perceive to be love and understanding and appreciation.
I mean, here's a cultural thing. In the U.S., it's mainly been, therefore, by the definition of a pet, not being a working animal.
Right.
With the exception of cats on the farm and the mousers and such.
Right.
It's basically been dogs and cats.
Yeah, I would say in the United States, it's primarily dogs.
And the cultural thing is that different cultures have different animals as pets. using the pet as a definition.
Sure. First and do they all, even have pets too?
Well, that's that yeah. It there's the presumption that you are economically, as a society, capable of enabling a critical number of people the economic privilege of being able to keep animals strictly for emotional and affectionate reasons and for nothing else.
Sure.
Not for food, not for working. So that already eliminates a lot of cultures, because in many cultures, I have an animal because I'm going to ultimately eat them, or because they're providing some sort of work, or they're providing some sort of food. You know, so I don't eat the cow until it's given me all the milk, and then we'll slaughter the cow. And throughout human history, I think throughout human history, this has been the role of animals.
You're correct. Yes.
But now it's so the whole idea of a pet is kind of on a mass scale, kind of a recent development. I think all throughout human history, elites did have pets.
Well, we know the Egyptians revered cats,
right?
But probably from what you're saying, and I think this is what has been found, is that they can trace back that the pharaohs and might have a cat, or the family of the pharaohs might have some sort of cat, and did it represent a god? I'm not sure.
Yes, it did. I don't remember the name of the Egyptian god, but it did represent a god, very powerful god.
Right,
yes.
And so in some cases they've been mummified and buried in some of the pyramids and other tombs that they've found, I believe. And in that case, I don't know. Is that, again, are we crossing a line of pet to actually something that's doing something for them? It's offering them some sort of eternity that they are getting from the pet.
Well, I remember in China, I was walking through a kind of a flea market in Shanghai, and there were lots of interesting things there that were catching my eye. I love these outdoor flea markets. And there was a little box, and it had what looked to me like a screen on the cover, and the cover would slide forward and back. So I'm looking at it, and because it had a screen on it, I'm thinking, if you flip the cover back, you must have kept something alive inside it. And then you would close it up, and the thing inside it could live through the air.
With the air,
through the screen. And I found out that this was a cricket box.
Ah.
And the cricket in Chinese culture was always a bringer of good luck. So, but it was a live cricket. And you would keep a live cricket in this little cricket box and keep the cricket box with you as you spent your day. I mean, you walked around, you know. But this brought luck. So, I mean, was it a pet?
Huh.
Did you keep the cricket because you were affectionate with it?
Or
did you keep the cricket because it was...
Because it brought you good luck.
It brought you good luck. So you fed it, you know.
Right.
And you gave it air and water. And
you actually kept it and took responsibility for it for that reason.
By Jiminy, you did.
Okay. Wow. That's kind of interesting, because, you know, my first reaction to it, and this is very cultural reaction, I believe, is that you don't have affection for it, but maybe you do.
Yeah,
I mean, and maybe the cricket does for you also. My other reaction to that is, how long do crickets live?
Yeah,
I think you've got a limited time span. Before.
So just when you get bored with it,
right?
You open it up one day and it's cricket, Jiminy, nothing's happening.
According to the internet, about 8 to 10 weeks.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh my gosh,
just enough time to breed, I guess.
Yeah.
But not if it's in a box. But
right, maybe that's the problem with them. But again, if you're doing that, it may be a little bit different, only because crickets may have things that consume crickets. I'm assuming they do. And so like birds and stuff, so that the average lifespan is going to be impacted by a predator as opposed to if it's living in a box with and getting whatever sustenance it needs.
Now, you mentioned birds, you know, and I'm thinking back that my very first pet was not a cat or a dog. It was a bird. And one of the reasons was because we lived in an apartment, in an apartment building, and my mother just did not want to have a four-footed creature walking through, cat or dog, right?
Right.
And she didn't want the, it was too small. Right. So she allowed a bird in a small cage, and it was a parakeet. And we had Ricky the first, and then Ricky the second.
Wow.
And I think we may have had a Ricky the third.
Now I got to ask these questions.
And I remember the first one, Ricky the first was of the blue variety, and then Ricky the second was of the green variety.
Where did Ricky come from?
Well, who knows?
I mean the name. We don't know.
No, okay. I was too young. I didn't ask. It sounded like a nice name.
Okay.
That's the name the bird came with. What did I know?
Of course.
It's the bird's name. Hello.
Right. Well, I mentioned my pets before. I also had fish.
And tropical fish.
But not for very long, because I did not take care of them very well.
Well, they're very hard to take care of. I think tropical fish is difficult. Hey, I have a tropical fish story, which is very true.
Is it cultural?
No, it's not cultural at all.
Then go for it.
Please continue.
I remember as a little kid, my grandmother told me that we were going to have a dinner that night. And she wanted to let me know that this guy was coming to dinner, and he was an uncle of mine who I'd never met before. And she said, and I'm telling you now, because you have to be very polite with him. He's going to shake your hand. And when you shake his hand, you're going to realize he's missing his fingers. And so I just want, I remember my grandmother wanted me to know this.
Kaufman play? No.
Well, might as
for
well
the four been. Of you out there who know who George Kaufman is.
So of course I'm like the 6-year-old kid, and I'm going, whoa, I'm going to meet this guy with no fingers.
Very cool.
And my grandmother told me to behave, you know. So I meet him, and sure enough, he shakes my hand that night, and it's missing his fingers. And
all of them?
I don't remember that detail.
Oh, wow.
Maybe he had a thumb. I don't know. But you know, without the thumb, he couldn't grab my hand.
Well, that's true. Or you would have slid right up to his elbow.
Which is why some people have monkeys as pets, I guess.
So you won't slide up to their elbow?
Yeah. They'll slide up to your elbow anyway.
Okay,
they're
I see.
Monkeys.
Now it's getting very, very strange. So, but go ahead.
I asked my mother.
So you're holding this guy's elbow.
I asked my grandmother. Yes. She wouldn't tell me. I don't know. I had this, you know, she wasn't going to tell me. But I asked.
Oh, it's one of those unspeakable things in the family.
Unspeakable family things, yes. Right? But I felt comfortable enough to ask my mother, what's with Uncle George? You know, like, he has no fingers.
Was his real name George, or why we changed it?
No, I just thought of it now because I couldn't remember what his real name was. Never met him before, never met him again.
Okay, right? Yeah.
It turned out he lost his fingers in the Amazon. Because he went down to the Amazon looking for gold at some point.
Huh.
You know, he was one of these guys who saw an opportunity.
Yeah.
And he wasn't able to do any, but he became the first importer of tropical fish to the United States.
Oh.
And while he was down in the Amazonas in South America, he discovered the piranhas.
Oh, no. Oh,
wow.
Geez.
My hand hurts right now.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So I guess you could say there was a cultural aspect to it in the sense that he was going down there and pilfering resources of that country.
In a grand colonialist tradition.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exploiting whatever he could exploit.
Well, he got his, or the piranhas got their just dessert.
Now, that's true. Fast forward to my career.
I think it was lady fingers or man fingers in
right,
this case.
Fingers, yeah.
Yes.
Man fingers. Which are very different from lady fingers.
Yes.
Fast forward in my career.
Chewier.
30 years later, I find myself down in the Amazonas in the section of Venezuela.
Yes.
Which is it's the Amazon.
Uh-huh.
You think of Venezuela as the coast and Caracas, but a significant part of the country is in the Amazonas. And I'm walking through an area where I'm with a guide, and we have to cross a river. And he said, now the way you cross a river safely when there's the possibility of piranha in the river is you look for a waterfall and then cross just before the waterfall. So before it crests over the
rocks.
Above
the waterfall.
Above the waterfall. Uh-huh. Just cross it there because there'll never be piranha by a waterfall.
Oh.
Because they know that if they fall over the rocks,
they
could die.
Yeah. Right. Huh.
So you can safely cross a piranha-infested river by a waterfall.
Interesting.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aren't you glad you tuned in already?
Yeah, really.
Right?
We're all learning something.
Well, it's going to save some people, I'm sure. I think...
Keep your fingers.
A lot of people with...
Man fingers or lady fingers.
As you like.
A lot of feet were probably sacrificed to find that out, actually.
Yeah.
Not here.
I think
nope.
the development of human knowledge was, over...
Things
over
had to be sacrificed.
Just like the saying, it was a brave man to eat the first oyster.
Right, right. Who then opened up an oyster bar, I believe. In Grand Central Station, I think it was.
And why some people keep oysters as pets.
That's right. Well, and you can't beat the pearls, It's a side benefit.
Then it's a working
animal.
Now
it's a working scene. There you go. Okay. See? Wow.
Yeah, but for one thing, you don't have to chase it around the room.
Well, no. Or it's very slow chase. So let me back up a tad here. We ended up with piranhas in Venezuela.
And pet oysters.
And then oysters. And
pet oysters.
Well, pet oysters, sure. There was a pet rock too in the United States. So I don't know if that went around the world or not.
Pet?
That's right. Yeah.
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 I forgot about that.
And what about the chia pet, which wasn't an animal, it was a vegetable.
Well, or a person's head. It was
right.
But the chia pet was
the chia pet.
True.
If it was shaped like a person's head, it was a vegetable that was being sold as an animal that was really a human head.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's weird.
It needed a lot of marketing.
Very catchy jingle.
So yeah, don't just ignore the fact it's an animal that's not an animal, but a vegetable and a human.
It's good they didn't go with that one.
No, that was not it.
That was rejected.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about getting sued on that.
Yeah,
one.
We're okay. No.
It made the first few cuts though, but ultimately, no.
Close. Yeah, it was close. But
story of my career, actually. When your culture showing,
and so is your foot,
and so is my foot. We're that close together. How amazing is that?
Wow.
I'm off COVID-19.
No, we're not doing COVID.
No,
but some people do keep bats as pets.
They do keep some people keep bats as pets. Wow. I'm sure they do. Well, if I'm not mistaken, and tell me if I'm wrong, but don't you have a bat house?
I do have a bat house.
Mm.
Hanging on the exterior of the garage.
Uh-huh.
The problem with my bat house is that I wasn't able to hang it high enough.
Okay.
I needed to get up there with a ladder because if you put your bat house too low, the bats won't come.
I see.
It has to be at least, I think, 9 or 10 feet up.
Well, I've heard that often in conversations, I believe.
Sure.
Yes.
The
bats need to be high.
Right. It's at very boring.
I went to many people. I went to college with many people who were like that, actually.
And so you might ask, well, why didn't I just hang the bat house high enough?
Dean. Why didn't you hang the bat house high enough?
I was too lazy. I didn't want to get the ladder. Well,
there you go. Fair enough.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I look at it every now and then, and I go, you should really hang that higher, because the bats will come if you do.
And why do you want the bats to come?
They eat the mosquitoes.
Okay.
They do.
So it's not to have them as pets.
They're working animals.
Well, also, I think that if in reality, I believe if you actually look it up, and maybe you could do this.
Okay.
I believe that bats consume, for humans, they consume an incredible number of mosquitoes, each individual bat does. However, in the overall numbers of mosquitoes, they're a minor contributor to, to control of mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'm not looking that up. I buy that.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I sounded even, like I knew what I was talking about. That is very authoritative.
So that even if one buys a bat house,
it's really not going
to make a difference. Yeah. You're going to sit outside, you're going to scratch in the summer.
Now you're running the risk of
anyway.
some bat biting your neck and sucking all your blood out. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But,
sure.
You know, that's how you got to take risks.
As opposed to getting a mosquito bite.
Right. Right.
which can give you dengue, malaria, chikungunya.
What else can you get from those things? Yeah. Probably a lot.
Oh, yep. Man.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, but also there are people who are bat specialists and everything and find them fascinating, and maybe they keep them as pets as well.
I'm sure somebody does.
Yeah, name three.
You know, I don't. But this whole idea of what kind of animals constitute pets in different cultures.
Hey, Dean.
You know.
What kind of animals are considered pets in different cultures?
Well, it made me think, we were talking about cats and dogs, and, you know, many cultures have religious proscriptions against certain animals.
Okay.
Like, I'm thinking throughout much of the Middle East, which is Islamic.
Yes.
The idea of having a dog as a pet has traditionally been profane. You don't. Right, Torin,
yeah,
you spent some time in Jordan.
I did, and that's right.
Right.
Yep.
Why would you bring a dirty or an animal that lives outside, a four-footed animal, into the house? The house is sacred, and the house must be clean as possible. The traditional role of the woman in these traditional cultures was to keep the house as clean as possible. So the last thing you want to do is have a dog inside the house.
Yes.
It's going to be defeating the purpose.
Right, right.
I think when we owned a dog, my wife was on board with that. But she also got the dog, so she couldn't really argue that fact too much. But
and remember, these ideas come out of traditional societies where these animals do live outside, and so you don't want these packs of dogs or animals come from packs of dogs suddenly coming into your house.
Sure. They weren't coming in. They weren't looking at it as something that was going to sleep with your with your son or your daughter or something like that. And they would look at it as their pet and take care of it.
No,
it wasn't becoming that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it
wasn't going to do. No, they weren't seen as even.
In fact, the wrong thing in that is what you're saying. That was not a factor at all. Right.
Right. Okay. Right. Now, has this changed? Yeah, of course it's changed.
Uh-huh.
You know, you go to the Emirates, for example. You know,
going to say, I do know an Islamic family that has a
of
pet
course,
dog.
Of course, yes. Or live, you know, a very Western
in
style life.
Yes.
And so you're living in a co-op building, you know, 100 floors in the middle of Dubai, 100 floors up, you know. Yeah, and you're living a very Western style life, and a lot of people have pets, dogs as pets. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But for the Maine, this has been something that you didn't do.
Yeah.
And you compare that to the European Western tradition of, yes, having the pet inside the house as a source of affection.
Yes.
Yeah, completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in those cultures, would there be pets of other kinds? Anything like that that might be kept? Did you see anything in Jordan, Torin?
Not that I can think of.
Well, for the elite in those societies, falcons, birds.
Ah, wow. Oh, interesting.
Oh, now we're getting into it.
You know, but again, this
is that
is
a pet though?
It wasn't a working animal, but it was a status symbol.
A status symbol.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I mean, so are dogs sometimes too. So I guess we can give them that. Sure.
And, you know, you can, if you travel even as a tourist to Gulf Arabia, you can participate in falconry events.
Uh-huh.
You know, you hold out for a fee, they'll put the leather band on your arm and you can hold your arm out and then suddenly be thrilled with a 60-pound falcon landing on your hand. Those birds are heavy.
They are. They're not quite 60 pounds, but yes.
Well, all right.
The one I think that you had.
It felt like 60 pounds to me.
Well, Dad, good enough.
But I'm standing there going, get me out of here. I got this bird of prey.
It's about to suck all the blood out of my neck. Oh, no.
It's
wait,
going
wrong,
for my
wrong
eyes.
Animal. Oh, your eyes. Sure. Sure. Well, yeah, I can see that. That also leads us. I know that in the United States, there's been a major problem with, we were talking about before, your relative going down and pilfering tropical fish out of the Amazon.
He was the first person to import tropical
fish. He was importing
into the United
right.
States.
So that makes give him his due.
He was still exploiting whatever he
it's
could.
Still colonialism.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway.
And did anybody in the Amazonas benefit from his presence? I doubt
Probably
it.
Probably not.
No.
No. Minimally. That being said, one of the things in the United States is there's a whole, both legal and illegal, and probably the illegal one is probably much larger, industry of pets.
Exotic pets.
Exotic pets, which is a nice term for things who shouldn't be pets, pretty much. But snakes, spiders, and I think those are some of the good ones, as opposed to bringing in things
like large carnivores.
Yeah, large cats of and you've got tigers and lions and things like that.
I had a friend, more or less a neighbor actually, who lived upstairs from me when I was in my 20s in this strange apartment in Brooklyn, who had a monkey as a pet.
Yeah.
And every time I entered his apartment, you know, I felt a bit uncomfortable because the monkey was always in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me feel uncomfortable. And then I would feel even more uncomfortable when the monkey came out of
the cage.
Yeah. Right.
And it made me think, this guy shouldn't have a monkey
no.
in New York City.
No. You know, and I'm sure there's people out there going, wait a minute, hold on. I've had, you know, monkeys, and I have this small monkey, and it's perfectly fine. I treat it very well, and it has free to run around and so on. And I'm sure there are situations where they do get treated quite well. However, I still am uncomfortable just with the idea of animals that are used to being out in these open spaces, or I guess you could say should be, being used in a form just, it's really in for the comfort of the human, because I maybe the animal's getting something out of it that's beyond that. It's hard to communicate with them, so it's tough to really tell. But I'm guessing that in some cases, at least, they're just a trained thing. You know, they're not domesticated animals as a cat and a dog are. They are animals that are wild. And they're being brought in, and as far as we know, we don't have the ability to domesticate them. And every once in a while, you know, we hear the stories of the one that gets extremely angry. Look, that happens with domesticated animals, too.
Oh, that happens with people.
Oh, it often happens with people. It's
I don't know how you can domesticate people.
No, that's a challenge. Hardest,
which is why you never call your closest ones my pet.
Okay. Is it time for a commercial or anything?
No.
Petco, want to buy time? Anybody?
This is why I'm not the pet.
I remember Ira, this kid in the seventh grade.
Oh, Ira.
I remember.
Yeah, no idea what you're talking
kid
about.
Kid in the seventh grade, he kept snakes.
Yes.
Pythons. Remember there was a kid who had a python in a tank? And I remember being in social studies class, and his mother runs into the classroom demanding to see him, and because the python had escaped. And she left the house.
Yeah. Smart.
Get out of there.
Yep.
That snake got out, and she got out.
Yeah. Yep. Wise.
Absolutely. Get out Let's of
vacate
Dodge.
Vacate the premises.
Yes. Well, pythons and boa constrictors and other animals like that, or other snakes like that, they have become a major problem in the United States because people in Florida, especially, because people have let them go.
Are you going to talk about the flushing the alligators down the...
No, that's not a real thing. But this is real. These are releasing them into the Everglades with the concept of, oh, well, it'll disappear into the Everglades. But there are no predators for these creatures. Mm. So they can find things to eat, and they can multiply. As soon as there's, you know, a male and a female, it's a Garden of Eden in there for them. And that's what's happened. And there is a major problem now. They're actually doing hunts now in the Everglades to rid the Everglades of them, because they're not indigenous. Mm. They've been brought in from other parts of the world, and it's a serious problem. And I think that's been true with other things from other pets.
Well, when you bring an animal out of its territory and you bring it to a new environment that where it never existed before, you're putting everything out of balance.
Yes.
And you're going to get some weird stuff going on after you do something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing.
It is.
So, you know, culling animals, becoming a business, becoming an economic opportunity to have hunting because animals need to be culled because they've been introduced into places where they shouldn't have been introduced in the first place.
Right.
It's very debatable.
It's all questionable, but it goes to pets because they were the bottom line of that seems to be that the idea was these creatures have been brought to be pets, and are they actually becoming pets? Also, some of these animals live an incredibly long time, and so I guess and another cultural
like the parrot.
Yeah,
we're talking about birds as pets. Parrots typically have. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're not, actually. I think we've covered that.
but you know, you stimulate my thought when you say things and then...
Beg your pardon?
you did. You're talking about these animals that live very long, and it made me think, aha, like the parrot.
Ah.
Right? Which is why pirates had traditionally a parrot. How did a pirate, by the way, develop the stereotype that they have, which is there's always an ancient parrot on their... shoulder.
An ancient parrot.
Well,
I'm
assuming they've lived a very long time.
Well, okay, I see. Because someone said that. I think I heard it on a podcast.
Right, exactly. Recently.
Yeah. They sound like Gilbert Gottfried. And a patch on one eye.
They all sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
They all sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
Which is great.
Sure, we love it.
Yep. Well, who has the patch? Is the parakeet?
Well, no, in advanced stereotypes, the parrot also has a patch.
I see. Yes. I think advanced stereotypes. We only want to play with advanced stereotypes.
Well, is there a breakfast cereal where there's a parrot as the...
Captain Crunch?
Toucan.
Captain Crunch? A toucan?
It's a toucan.
But it's got a patch on its eye.
No, the toucan does not have a patch.
There is one.
Well, it might be on... Does Captain Crunch have a parrot on there? Mine.
I don't know.
So I don't know. I haven't eaten Captain Crunch in a long time. So,
this implies, of course, that the parrot had something wrong with its eye and went to the optometrist, and they put a patch on it.
Because a parrot would need the patch, yes, you know? Because God forbid people could see any kind of deformity or any problem with the eye.
The pirate master could only see it with one eye because he also had a patch on his eye.
It's got to be on the right, on the correct shoulder.
Which is why the parrot...
Which is where the eye is, right?
Which is why the parrot is always on the left shoulder and the pirate master is always... always has a patch on the left eye.
Is it a pirate master or a parrot master?
Yes.
Well, the parrot could...
The pirate is the parrot master.
But the parrot could sometimes be the pirate master.
The parrot can be the pirate master.
If the parrot takes charge.
If the parrot plays its cards right.
Exactly.
A card-playing parrot.
Exactly.
Now we're talking.
But if
that's entertainment.
But if the parrot was not a pirate master...
Yes.
Then the pirate was usually the parrot master.
Without a doubt, yes.
Correct.
So, clearly.
There's Pirate's Booty. Is that what you're thinking of?
Pirate Booty?
Pirate's Booty?
What's Pirate Booty? It's a snack.
It's like a cheesy snack.
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. I see.
And it's got a pirate with the eye patch and the parrot. I don't know if the parrot has an eye patch. I can't see that.
Oh, I see.
Definitely has the parrot.
Pirate Booty? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of things I could say about that, and I will refrain from saying all of them.
Well, say one. Okay.
We can only see one of the parrot's eyes, other eye may have a patch.
It may have a patch, and Pirate Booty could... Wouldn't that be like the backside of the pirate? Am I wrong with that?
It's Pirate's Booty.
Oh, Pirate's Booty. Well, okay.
Still...
Is it possessive?
But let's be accurate here.
And is there a patch on it?
We'll never know.
Thank goodness. I choose.
The backside of the bag.
I choose not to know.
You could have patches all over the place. He could, on your eye.
Sure. Wherever you want.
Oh, my God. Well, I think we've absolutely covered this.
Well, I have one question.
Okay.
Before we put
the if you put the patch on the right place, you have covered it.
Yeah, I think.
Exactly. So, Dean, I'm wondering, you know, we talked about how cats and dogs are, you know, very common pets in the U.S. and are domesticated animals. Are there other animals in other cultures that are kind of known for being common pets that are more domesticated?
In the traditional definition of the pet, which is the non-working animal?
Yeah.
I think, and with the exception of the elites of any of these cultures, because they've been able...
as ubiquitous as it is in
the US. As a mass phenomenon, right. I think the Western concept of the dog and the cat and the...
Really? Okay.
That, and the... Probably then the bird and the fish after that. But that's pretty much, that's become pretty much universal. But I think that's a modern development.
Well, I think that I know I've learned a lot today. Unfortunately, none of it's cultural. But
learned a lot about Pirate's Booty.
But then again, isn't everything cultural?
Everything really has a cultural element.
Does it?
And sometimes those elements
I mean, we're going by that, but, you know.
Sometimes they're a whole lot more important than in other cultures. Now.
Yes. We've lost him.
You're going to cut this out.
Well, that's it.
Oh, no, we're keeping this.
Oh, that's it.
This is gold.
That's all in.
It's all gold.
Now,
all
in. Return to the pirate and the parrot. Oh,
great. Good. Just we didn't cover that enough.
Really.
You know what I'm saying.
Because there's not only the patch on the eye and the parrot on the shoulder, but there's also the missing arm that's replaced with a hook. And usually a leg that's replaced with a
peg leg.
With a wooden.
Yes.
Wooden leg,
yes.
Right?
Yes. What? That's a dangerous job.
Is that where it all comes from?
Absolutely.
I assume, yeah.
And these people who are our captains have been so out front so much and have been in the midst of the battles and the entanglements and all the things that can happen in that profession that they have been marred. And therefore, they're
marred and scarred.
Marred and scarred. And these are their badges of courage that they've shown.
Now, in that same stereotype with the patch on
that?
The parrot's
just
eye,
running it out there.
didn't the parrot also have a peg leg?
I think it should.
I think it did.
I think there may be a few animations like that. Yes. Let's hope not in real life. All right.
But
well,
to your point, parrots live a very long time.
They do.
And they outlive their masters in many cases.
They do. And that's true. And so you have to kind of deal with them almost like children in those situations. Usually they will far outlive dogs and cats. I don't know for sure how long, and some of the birds live a considerably long time.
I'm seeing their lifespan is as little as 20 to 30 years for smaller species, up to 50 years or more for larger species.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So, if you're 50 years old and you get a parrot, you got a shot at having to leave it in your will.
Yeah.
You know, a serious one. And that's true.
And that's why the parrot's hanging around.
You bet.
And when it finds out that it's not in the will, you're going to have one pissed parrot.
Well, you know what? I don't know of any better time to wrap up our podcast, but on a pissed parrot. So thank you, Dean Foster.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
And thank you, Torin. We're glad you're with us again, and we're all in studio. And
me too.
And we're just happy that this whole thing is moving forward, and we hope you're all safe, and everybody is still taking precautions, unless you're listening to it after we've gotten by, in which case, thank goodness we got by. Anyhow, hope your pet is safe, and you all enjoy your pets, whatever they may be, and take good care of them. And treat them very well and name them very clever names.
That's important.
That was the in the will, by the way, of G. Gordon Liddy. So that's this podcast of
Oops, Your culture's showing.
Smell ya. Okay, listen, the way to get hold of us is oopsculture show@gmail.com.
And our Twitter handle is Oops Culture Show. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, you should really subscribe. That's the best way to go, really. Honestly, I know what I'm talking about. All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. Subscribe. Thank you.